Okay, welcome back. It is Wreath Threads Plus number 2. I'm Gary.
And I'm Christine.
Yes, and for those who didn't hear number 1 or haven't been listening to the regular podcast, Wreath Threads Plus is a special monthly podcast where we talk about a subject in depth, and could be any kind of thing, open-ended, off the wall, or very serious. And also part of Wreath Threads Plus is that we have guests, and so we're very happy to welcome back to the podcast here a couple of returning guests. First, from St. Louis, we have Kathy Leahy. Hi, Kathy.
Hi, Gary and Christine.
And all the way out there in California, we have Rich Ross.
Hi, Gary and Christine and Kathy.
Yes.
You know what I realized, too, actually, today? We have one person from each time zone in the United States today.
Yes.
Isn't that awesome?
Mm-hmm. Wreath Threads Plus!
Yes, we are. We're spread across the country. Yes.
Technology is just swell.
Yep. So we have Rich and Kathy here to talk with us and have a discussion here about, well, the question is the hobby cruel to animals? And, yeah, obviously a controversial question, and the discussion should be interesting. So we want to start out with what we need to do is define cruel. What is cruel? Can we say that anything's cruel if we don't know what cruel is?
Right, and I think we should also add, too, before that, you know, at either extreme of an opinion, you're going to find people that are going to say that everything that has anything to do with animals is cruel. So we're going to not really talk about it from that point of view. So we're assuming that we are going to involve animals in our life, what is cruel and what is the definition and what are we doing, right? Mm-hmm. So I just want to throw that out there.
Okay. Well, my thoughts about the definition of cruelty is that cruelty involves some intent to harm for no apparent reason, no good reason at all. Not that there are ever good reasons to actually harm something, but, you know, there are people in the world who are kind of evil and enjoy inflicting pain on some other creature or being, and that's cruel. I think that's cruelty. That would be my thoughts about cruelty. What do you think, Rich?
I don't know if it always involves intent or not. It can be certainly defined that way or thought of that way, you know, because it usually involves some kind of feeling of callous indifference, you know,
yes,
or pleasure in causing pain. But colloquially, it's also, you know, just behavior that causes pain to another creature. So it could go either way. I think, you know, it's often intent to cause the pain is thought of as cruel, but you can also have the cruelty of neglect. So, you know,
yes,
making that, it's kind of hard for me. It's as a disciple of the Wreath Evangelist, I'm going to back into this full force going forward by saying it depends.
Nice.
I think it does depend, and I think you're right that you can be cruel by neglecting the care of something that is entrusted to you as well.
Right, and to me, I was thinking also. So to me, there's three elements. There's cruelty with intent. There's cruelty through neglect. And then there's cruelty through ignorance. So
yes,
you can be cruel by not taking the time to understand and know what it is that each creature needs in order to be treated fairly.
Well, is that really cruelty if you just don't understand, or is that just a product of ignorance?
Well, I think willful ignorance, right? So if you try to understand and it doesn't go well, then that's one thing, right? But
right,
if you don't take the time to try to understand and...
Or you just don't care enough to try to...
Right, take in animals that you have really no business keeping, I think that can be cruel as well.
Yeah. Well, and there are people who will do those things, unfortunately, in this world.
Yeah, well, at the same time, well, I think actually I want to say something first, if that's okay, before we go on, which is that pretty much any part of this discussion could sound really bad.
Right, right.
So like any philosophical discussion, which this is, and I have that's what my degree is in, it's all thought games. So anyone listening, when we're running out experiments or ideas or thought games, it doesn't necessarily mean we believe them or we think them completely. So I just think that's important to get out there, because I don't want this taken out of context later on. You know, somebody says, Rich said putting fish in a bucket is cruel. It's like, well, without the contents of the rest of the discussion, that's not going to be fair. And I feel pretty good just saying that up front.
Or even true, or even remotely resembling what was intended to be communicated.
Right. And I think that's really the point of these ReThreads Plus podcasts is exactly what you said, the thought games and the thought experiments, and exploring down roads that we haven't before to see where they take us. So they really are meant to be not necessarily practical. They're meant to be experiments in thought. I think that's a really good way to describe it.
Great. So let me drop this plus on you about the possible cruelty of ignorance. If you have an animal and somebody and it's sick, and somebody tells you that you should treat that animal by taking it and dropping it into vinegar for a half an hour, is that cruel, or is that forgivable, or is forgivable even a word that you would associate with that? So ignorance can be, you can do really cruel things even though you've made the attempt to find out what you should do well. So I don't know where I stand on that at the moment.
You know, I liken that to the history of modern human medicine, because if you look at human medicine, much of what we have done to ourselves and fellow man, now we would look at as being cruel, but at the time it was best practice.
Yeah, and the tenet being do no harm. That's the first thing that doctors are supposed to do.
right.
So they don't ever intend to do harm. It's just sometimes the best knowledge isn't good enough.
And I don't think that's particular to the hobby, to reef hobby or to fish keeping at all. I mean, I think that's true of keeping any animal at all,
it's
or
like
frankly, plants, right? You can do the same thing. Exactly.
The best practices of raising children when I was little are different from what they were when my parents were little, and they're different from how I raised my children. The norms, the standards for what's acceptable practice has changed.
And funny enough, I often will make Jeremy have a vinegar bath, and it seems to be working very well.
Well, he doesn't have gills, so it may not.
Yes. Not that I'm aware of yet.
Unless there's something you're
really
not telling.
Him. You'll be applauded in another 10 years for your foresight in this regard.
Exactly. Well, so that may be silly, but that brings up a good point, which is that, you know, the only way that we as a group learn anything about anything really is by trying things and stepping over the edge of what is sensible and known.
Okay.
So where does cruelty go into that?
I can give you my favorite example, the thing that started the whole skeptical reef keeping series. So you know you have a fish that's got ick, and instead of treating it with a way that we know is going to cure the ick, or at least get it back, let's just say cure for now. You decide to put ginger in the tank instead because you're trying to see if that will work. Is that cruel? What do you guys think about that?
I think it's been tried before, so we know. And your experience is not going to be different from what's happened in the past with ginger. So, but, you know, it depends on how educated this person is and how reasonable the person he got the information was to him. I mean, it's really hard to know in this hobby what is scientifically proven and what's not.
You know what else that brings up, though, as well, is another way to think about cruelty is we have to think of it in terms of cruelty to the individual, but we also need to think of it in terms of cruelty to the species. So in that sense, maybe Ginger is a little silly example, but treating an animal with an untested, unknown method might be cruel to that animal, but it might lead to exactly. Better health care for many, many animals down the road.
Right.
So
learn something from everything.
Right. So maybe there is cruelty, but maybe in certain cases cruelty is permissible and even
but
acceptable.
Again, even in the case of that you just mentioned, there's no intention to do harm. There's intention only to
right.
do good. So I think the intention does matter as regards to whether something should be considered cruelty or not. If you're really trying to advance the science of things, and what you're trying, it contradicts something that has been dogma for a long time, people might say, oh, you're being cruel, but it's not really. It's just you're being different. And the intention, I think, does matter.
One of the things that in this discussion, and Christine, you triggered it in for me, is when it comes to the keeping of living things for hobby, and given the discussions of late with when it comes to Hawaii and legislation and fisheries and all those kinds of things, I find it quite interesting that there is a different mentality for marine animals and freshwater animals, and what triggered it for me was when you mentioned plants. We all keep living things, and for those of us in the aquarium business, we have kept, usually all of us started with freshwater. We have kept freshwater, we've kept marine animals, and keep plants in one form or another. And there's a different mentality and a different approach for each of those.
I think that's a really good point. Because even the people who live in Hawaii and have this feeling that they would like to shut down the fisheries because they feel that it's cruel, perhaps, to animals, how do they feel about cockroaches that must be present in their homes in Hawaii because they're everywhere in Hawaii? How do they feel about pesky life forms? Are they interested in preserving those as well? I think about all the living things that I'm growing in my basement to feed my fish, am I supposed to feel bad if I kill a rotifer? We as humans use nature to our benefit. That's what we do. I'm not in favor of inflicting pain intentionally on any living thing, but, it's a little bit disingenuous to say that we need to never touch a reef fish, take it away from its reef because it's so happy and wonderful there. We don't really know what the life of the fish is on the reef. They may be living in terror all the time because they're predators. Surely when people say, oh, you've killed all these animals when you take them out of the ocean and ship them around the world. But we don't count how many of those animals die from natural causes on the reef. So are they better off in an aquarium with no predators than they are on the reef that's full of predators? I don't know.
Well, we're touching on what I called in the ethics article I wrote, I guess it was Skeptical Reefing 7, the hierarchy of caring. Because, cruelty and caring is a spectrum. It's not a single point.
Really
like
is.
We were talking about before. So, we care less about animals that don't have brains. We care slightly more about animals who have very small brains, like a cockroach. We care a little bit more about animals that have even larger brains, like mice and rats, but at some point we don't care too much about them either.
Well, we don't care about them when they're in our house. They get too close
to us.
They don't like it.
But, Well, yeah, but, you know, and then look at how we can talk about how we treat food animals, and it goes up and up and up. Mm-hmm. And it gets really, really convoluted, I think, with fish specifically, because they are also a food animal. And it gets really difficult to parse what the why is it okay to spear a fish or pull it up onto the deck of a boat and hit it with a wooden stick, so it's knocked out and dying, and then, you know, throw it so it gasps for air into an ice chest, but it's not okay to catch that fish and put it in a bag and keep it in an aquarium.
And where it will live.
I think one of my favorite photos illustrates exactly that point, which is that, you know, Rich, of course, you know, focuses a lot on cephalopods, and one of my favorite photos of him is, you know, in a normal restaurant eating a fried cephalopod. So, and we have no problem with that.
No, nobody has a problem with it.
Not everybody has a problem with it.
Okay. A lot of people
don't have a problem.
but that's right. But it's, I mean, I think that throws an important light onto the discussion. There can't be a right answer. But you also can't dismiss people who say, yeah, it's a cruel thing to do. As much as you can't dismiss people who say, well, it's not really. I mean, there are some things. I mean, you know, and then it gets into really, really weird things, right? Because what if I were breeding clownfish and then wanted to hit them with a hammer? You know, is that cruel?
Yeah.
In one sense, but is it less cruel than somebody having that fish in a tank and not doing a very good job, even though they're trying really hard, and that animal slowly dying over weeks in a soup of ammonia, which is cruel. So it gets too intense there, but, you know, at some point the suffering matters just for the sake of the suffering, probably, maybe, I don't know.
You know what strikes me too as we're talking about this, especially with regards to food fishery, I think our definition of cruelty really depends on our own human input. And what I mean by that is this. We don't think it's cruel to kill an animal to eat it, but we do think it's cruel to mistreat an animal accidentally or anything. And I think the difference there is that with the animal we've put in a tank, we've created an emotional attachment. So if we don't have the emotional attachment to the food animal, that doesn't feel cruel to us.
Right. And there's a long historical tradition of eating the things that we kill.
Right.
And there. I mean, did you see the PBS special last Sunday? PBS NewsHour had a thing on Hawaii and the issues there, and they showed some residents of Hawaii who were saying that, well, our ancestors would never kill a fish unless they were planning to eat it. And we respect the reef, and we don't think you should play with fish. It's a serious business to catch a fish and kill it. And, you know, they have a point there. But on the other hand, so there's a tradition, certainly for hunting as well, that if you're going to kill something, then you should be prepared to take it home and eat it, because that justifies the kill.
I'm not sure if that speaks to cruelty, though. I think that's intent to eat the animal.
I don't think it's cruelty at all.
Well, you could very easily cruelly kill an animal that you want to eat. I mean, I could go in the backyard and beat my chicken to death with a stick, and that could take an hour. It could run around like crazy, but I really want to eat it. That seems like unnecessary cruelty. And, you know, that's one of the arguments about hunting, is that, you know, you wound an animal and then it runs away and then it's out in the forest or wherever and it takes 3 days to die.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a lot of depends in there.
There are a lot of depends and a lot of circumstances that make things justifiable or not.
Yeah. So I think we have to be careful. We can't say, you know, when I was watching the PBS piece and I was thinking about, you know, the Hawaiians and, you know, we never did it without wanting to, our ancestors never wanted to, you know, take a fish and play with it and kill it unless we were going to eat it. But, you know, I see people catching a fish and throwing it on the sand to slowly asphyxiate. So it's, that seems, there seems to be some element of cruelty in there, but we overlook it because we want to eat the animal.
So
that's
maybe
a weird thing.
Right. Maybe the key then is to stop thinking about cruelty in terms of our human emotional involvement, which is eat or not eat, and start thinking of cruelty in terms of what the experience of the animal is, not our experience. So forget about whether you take the animal out of the ocean to eat it or to keep it in a tank and look at it. What is the experience of that animal? Are you going to take it out and kill it quickly and eat it? Are you going to take it out and kill it slowly and painfully to eat it? Are you going to take that animal out and keep it well and try to do your very best to provide it with a comfortable life? Or are you going to take it out and stick it in a tank and just not do much of anything and have it be in pain out of neglect? So I think that for me, we need to turn the focus back onto the experience of the animal and not the experience of the human.
Well, I think that's a very good point. And I think that we have a tendency to, as you say, care more about things we have an emotional attachment to, but we also tend to think of things that we love as relatives of ourselves or more like humans than perhaps we should. We don't really understand the pain process of a fish, I don't think. At least I don't understand. I should put it in those words. Is it better to kill it fast? I don't know. I think part of the issues that I have with the Hawaiian hubbub is that they are not really thinking about the biology of the fish when they talk about shipping practices and things like that. They're thinking about some other agenda that they may have. And they're couching their words in a way that is accessible to most people who have no understanding of the biology of the fish either. So, you know, they say you need a gallon of water per fish in order to ship them, or it's cruel, but they don't really know that that's the case. And I think that people who've been in this business for years understand how to package a fish so that it will live at the destination. And a gallon of water is not necessarily the best thing for them.
I might be a party pooper on that one.
Well, certainly there are important aspects that are ignored by this legislation, like how much air is in the bag with the fish.
Oh, the legislation is terrible.
It's a more important issue.
Yeah, the legislation's terrible. Party poop on that a little bit is the idea that people who are in the business necessarily know what's great for the fish.
Well, people who are in the business who are still in the business, you know, there may be people who start out, but you don't make any money on dead fish.
You'd be surprised. It's a hard conversation. Well, I think if you're I wouldn't put Hawaii into this. I think Hawaii is a very well-managed fishery and doesn't have this kind of problem at all. But I could tell you from experience that some of the other South Pacific places, you know, the industry can you can go for years with bad shipments. And that seems.
But if the fish are dead, who makes money?
Well, that's why I said you can go for years for that, saying that it's going to get better. I'm learning how to do it. The next shipment's going to be good. All I need is another few $1,000. You're going to get all the next shipments. And that can run on for a long, long time.
Seems like bad business to me.
It is incredibly bad business, but it
happens.
Does happen. So I just like to be careful, you know, just where I'm trying to be careful with, you know, with parsing what the anti-trade people are saying, I think it's important that we we're careful with the details of what we say about our own stuff. And you know, that's my little uh-huh. line of sand. So for okay. it's pedantic.
Why whenever we have this subject, cruelty or anything related to it, treatment, so on and so forth, it always focuses on fish. What about coral?
That's a good point.
They got no brains.
No, but that's exactly right, though. I think because
they don't look at you.
Yes, because they're not charismatic, right? They're not. We can't identify with them because they're so different.
And neither are cockroaches. They have really cold eyes.
But they have brains, and you can see a cockroach suffer.
And I've heard you can train cockroaches, but I've never been able to do it.
Sure. I think though when you remove the brain from the animal, I think it's a real stretch to talk about the animal suffering. You can see it having reactions, but there's nothing there to suffer in a sense, in an important sense, I think.
I agree. I think that the common understanding of it is that when you think of pain, there's all of the sort of physiological responses that we consider pain, but without the emotional response that accompanies it, then it isn't pain. And a good way to think about that is in some of the anesthetics that we use in humans, where a good example is propofol, where you are awake, you have the experience of the pain, but you are detached from the emotional involvement, and so you don't experience it as pain. So if you're not attaching an emotional thing to it, is it still pain? Now, that said, without getting into a debate over whether fish have emotions, they certainly have areas of the brain that process things in the same way that our emotional areas do, or in maybe not the same because we can't really tell, but there's certainly structural and biological things that are very similar. So it's not impossible to think that there is some response that they're having beyond just the simple neurological reflexive and hormonal things like cortisol reactions to pain.
All right, we refer to corals as being happy, unhappy. We can tell if they're stressed. we do.
Yeah.
We know if our corals are happy or unhappy. We know that cutting them up and breaking them up stresses them.
Yeah.
And we would never think of cutting up and breaking up an animal. So
we do plants all the time.
Exactly. And that's what gets back to the thing I said earlier, is the way we look at marine animals, freshwater animals, and plants is so very different, because we have this mentality when it comes to freshwater animals. I mean, how many goldfish die every year at school fairs or after school fairs?
Yeah. Many, many less than 10 years ago.
Why do you say that?
Because a lot of places have gotten on this bandwagon of giving goldfish away to people who have no idea what they're doing with the fish is a bad idea. It still happens, but it happens less than it used to. That pendulum is swinging the other way.
That's a good thing.
But school fairs aside, in general, I think we could all agree that the freshwater fish approach to, I'll go buy some fish, oh, they died, I'll go buy some more fish, oh, I'll buy some more, pretty soon I give up, they keep dying. That goes on all of the time.
That happens in saltwater all the time, too.
Yes, but I would submit at a much greater level in freshwater.
Maybe. That could be.
I think maybe just because of the expense, right?
Well,
Well, it's also got something to do with cultured animals, I think. If you're growing the animal, I think as people we have a switch in our brain that kind of flips. Not all people, lots of people. That when you're growing an animal, farming an animal for a specific purpose, it's okay if bad things happen.
To use it for that purpose.
To use it. There's a better way to say it. to use it for that purpose. So making future goldfish
to feed them. That is a thing that I don't understand at all, but yes, it is a thing.
Well, but we do understand it completely. That's, you know, that's how we deal with chicken. It's how we deal with fish. It's how we deal with almost all of our meat.
Well, that's true. But it's how we do with research animals as well.
And it's also true of the animals that we feed our reefs, too. Yeah. I mean, how many of us culture, you know, not only just rotifers, but other, you know, types of zooplankton, shrimp, even feeder fish, you know?
Yep. Absolutely.
Yep.
I have 8 different kinds of copepods in my basement.
Gary, I think we got away from the point you were making, and I want to make sure that we understand what you were trying to say.
I'm used to it. It's okay. Well, it just... Yeah, we can make excuses and make rationalizations for all aspects of that, but I mean we do raise, we tank raise and we culture in Florida fish farms freshwater fish all the time, and I think for a lot of people, because they're cheap and they're not coming out of the ocean
and we're eating them,
that lets us off the hook in
it does. I'll make this a little bit more complicated. Clownfish breeders often have no problem culling animals that don't stand up to their standards.
Indeed, they do.
Nothing wrong with the animal. It's not physically deformed necessarily, although some culls are. It's just not up to the standards of the breed that's trying to be bred.
There are also clownfish breeders who will set aside those fish as a separate category and sell them sometimes for a lesser price and sometimes for a greater price.
Right.
And how goofy looking they are. If they're really ugly enough to be beautiful, then sometimes you can get more money for them. But the common practice is to euthanize them, and usually people try to do it the most humane way possible. And you know, and I personally don't have a problem with culling clownfish because we want to keep the species as a fine a form as we can. And if you breed fish that are less than optimal, you're going to have less than optimal babies, and
right.
That's not representative of the ocean or the, and what we're trying to do with our aquariums is have a little slice of the ocean in our living rooms.
Right, and it's very hard, and this will get back to something we were saying a minute ago. I think it's very hard to have a problem with culling fish humanely. If we kill and breed fish to eat humanely. And it's very hard to feel bad about that because one's just for a pet and one's to eat. But it's the same kind of animal. You know, why aren't we raising clownfish to eat? Oh, my God, we could have popcorn clownfish. That would be fantastic. We should totally do that. a Reflex Plus! But I was going to say... The idea about the humanely kill is an important one. You know, even my understanding of Peter Singer, he wrote Animal Liberation and one of the most well-known animal rights people or animal just being cognizant of how we treat animals, is that, you know, it's the way you dispatch the animal that makes a difference. If you give an animal a very, very good life, or a good life, and you make sure that it's not suffering throughout its life, it's got enough space to move around in, and it's getting enough food, and it's not stressed all the time, and then you kill it very quickly, that seems okay. You know, it seems way more okay than killing it very slowly.
Right. I think that's something that Temple Grandi has done a good job with as well, as far as accepting the fact that we are going to kill animals to eat them. So how do we make that kill as humane as possible?
And her approach is to understand the animal and understand what they need and what makes them feel comfortable. Too often, I think people with good intentions try to think of ways to make the animal more comfortable that really makes them more comfortable.
Exactly.
Because... an understanding of the biology of the animal is just harder work. And, you know, they want to have the feeling of being humane and wonderful to the animal, but they don't really have the wherewithal or the the inclination to really dig into what matters. In my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that part of this Hawaiian legislation stuff is like that too much. That they're not really thinking about the biology of the fish and what the fish need and what the fish's life is like in the ocean.
Let's take a different angle here. The whole process by which we get wild caught animals, coral or fish, collected by divers, put into holding areas, bagged up, shipped across the ocean, dropped off in California, put into more holding areas, delivered to the fish store, set aside the aquarist, all the way to the fish store.
Okay.
Is that a cruel process? Is there cruelty in that process? Where does that fit in the spectrum?
I think there is room for cruelty in that process, and there's room for not cruelty in that process.
I think there's room for improvement in the process.
Absolutely room for improvement in the process. As Rhett and I have been, you know, saying for a long time, is we don't really have the data. So it's kind of hard to say, is there cruelty? But I think the process itself doesn't necessarily entail cruelty.
From what everything, I don't know that much about the process, because my aquarium experience has been raising the fish myself. So I don't really know the ins and outs of what happens when fish are delivered to California and what happens after that. But it does seem like things have gotten better in the past few years in terms of survival. When I talk to local store owners, survivability of the fish that they acquire from the big facilities in California, that things are getting better and that there have been some improvements. And I think as this hobby progresses, and it's a fairly young hobby as hobbies go, things will get better because it pays to keep them alive. I mean, that's the whole object of the game. So
I think one of the things that people tend to do too, who are not hobbyists or not part of the industry or are not ichthyologists, is to make a snap judgment that simply the act of taking a fish out of the ocean and putting it in a bag mm-hmm. is cruel. Mm-hmm. And I think I disagree about that because, you know, if you've seen a shipment come from Live Aquaria, for example, the bags are blacked out. You know, there's a lot of things that are done to make sure that fish is kept comfortable and stress-free. So I don't think that we can say that simply taking them out of the ocean is an act of cruelty.
And when you consider the fish's experience in life, it's hard to say whether they're... Life in nature is a cruel thing.
I don't know if you can say that if intent is central to your cruelty.
But nature is a danger, can be dangerous. The life of a fish is not all blue waters and sunny shores.
Absolutely.
So, you know, nature is what it is. There's good and there's bad, and people tend to think of nature as being all benign, and it certainly isn't. When you think about tornadoes and malaria and, you know, earthquakes, I don't know. There's just a lot that happens in nature that isn't benign at all to anybody, to any part of the rest of the world. So taking an animal out of its home on the reef sounds like a terrible thing if you think of its home as being a sweet little nest in the water. But it could be that this fish would be terrorized most of its life by bigger fish that live on the reef as well. And if you take it out and put it in an aquarium where there aren't any predators, it may have a happier life than what it would experience in the reef. It's sort of depends, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So what's cruel about taking it out of the reef? I mean, is it?
Well,
is it,
you're not going to get me to say that implicitly an action is cruel of catching a fish. You could catch the fish in a cruel way. I mean, they're
sure.
The process of needling a fish, is that cruel or not? That one is still out, which is one of the reasons I'm so excited that Matt Wandel has allowed me to help him in the work he's doing and trying to make hyperbaric chambers for collecting fish. So, you know, to a certain extent, grabbing a fish from deep water and bringing it up till its bladder expands and makes them float, that's not good for the fish.
Right.
Now, again, we don't have the data. We don't have, well, it could kill the fish. We don't have the data on survivability. We don't have the data. We don't have the data. It seems like a bunch of fish that come in that way don't make it. It seems like a bunch of them do. But, you know, that one I could definitely see as being a hard one to categorize. As is it cruel or is it not? I mean, we want the fish. People want the fish, but
and you certainly don't want to hurt the fish. That's not your intention. Your intention is to keep it as healthy as you can possibly keep it. And either way, whether you're needling it or whether you're using a hyperbaric chamber, you're trying to alleviate pain and suffering in an animal that you have taken from its home.
So I think an interesting way to sort of bring this to a close is to think about it from the terms of the person who has a tank in their living room, just like I do and all of you do, and consider all of the ways that we can take this argument and use it. So what can we do as hobbyists to ensure that our hobby and our practices in our homes are not cruel and that we are thinking of the best interests of the animals as opposed to the thing that is emotionally easiest for us?
Very beautifully put. I think it behooves all aquarists to understand what their animals need to be healthy and happy and live a long life, and to be prepared to provide for them. You know, it's there are things that we do know. There are a lot of things we don't know, but there are things we do know, and it's up to the hobbyist to seek that information out and learn it so that they can give their animals good care. I mean, you wouldn't want to have a dog or a cat in your house that isn't well cared for, and you certainly wouldn't. And the same should go for fish in an aquarium, whether it's a goldfish or a very expensive marine animal. It's the best way to enjoy the hobby, and it's also the best way to keep these animals.
I think it's twofold, too. There's two elements to it. There's preparation and restraint in only choosing animals that you really can care for properly. But I think the other half of it is that once you do have that animal, spending the time to observe it, right? Instead of spending time in the sump and fixing things and testing water, really looking at the animal every day and seeing if it's, you know, if you've got good polyp extension and if the animal seems to be growing or if it seems stressed and contracted and all of those things. I think that's important too, is to watch the development of the animal to make sure that it's thriving.
Yes. Agreed.
The other part of that is I think the approach should be, and this may sound extreme, but I really do buy into it, that if you're going to take on an aquarium and fish freshwater or saltwater, doesn't matter, if you're going to take those on, I think your approach should be toward them just like it would be getting a puppy.
Exactly.
I mean, you have to commit yourself. I mean, you take in a puppy, and for the most part, that's part of your family for as long as it lives, and there's never a thought of returning it because it's just too much work or anything like that. And you need to take on that same approach with aquariums. It's not, you know, it's not the old thinking of, oh, we don't want the goldfish anymore, flush it down the toilet. No, these are animals, and you make a commitment to keep them for your viewing pleasure. And so that commitment, just like it is for a puppy or a cat, is to do your utmost to keep them as healthy as possible, give them the best environment as possible for as long as they live. And I think that's where many aquarists fall short, freshwater or marine, is that mentality is not in place when they start the process.
I think the other thing that we sometimes, that we can do better is that we have to consider the needs of the animal as it is when we purchase it, but we also have to consider the needs of that animal later in life. So is it, how big is it going to get? Is it going to eat different things? How is it going to interact with the animals that you already have? And that's something that may be a little bit difficult to do because you have to think years in advance, you know. A good example of this is I have a tank full of very large cichlids, which I got as very small cichlids, and that was easy and fun. And now it's, now they're big and it's work. But that's the commitment I made when I took them in, was that I was committing to their entire lifespan, which is not always a cute, tiny little animal. And now they're big and meaty and they eat a lot. And I'm okay with that because that's my responsibility. That's my job basically as their caretakers.
Yeah, I think that's the best approach. I think if you must fall short of that, if circumstances dictate that you have to give up the aquarium or you can't take care of an animal that's grown too big, that it's beholden to you to find an alternative home for this animal, just like you would for a dog or a cat if you had to give it up. And you know, it's a very painful process for most people to do that. These are pets. These are members of the family. So behave accordingly.
I would say people should think very carefully about what they're doing and why they're doing it. I think they should be honest with themselves to avoid making excuses for doing whatever they want to do. And I think that they should be asking for cruelty-free animals at the pet store.
How do you define cruelty-free animals?
I think that's, without transparency and without the data, it's impossible. But if we don't ask for it, we're never going to be sure we're even being that people are trying to get that for us.
I like the fact that it starts the conversation.
Yes, and it's got to go on. For instance, you know that store that does bag lot sales? Don't go to that store.
Yeah.
Just don't. I think actually here's an easy thing that you could do as a hobbyist. I'm so terrible with practical things because I try to stay away from recipes. But this one might be good. Realize that the point of your aquarium is the animals in it, not to have the protein skimmer. Right?
Yes.
So stop spending $100 on a protein skimmer, but then being upset that your cleaner shrimp costs $40.
Oh, I just love you, Richard Ross.
Well, I love you too, Kat.
You know, I have a lot of aquariums, but I don't have any protein skimmers.
Yeah. No, I think that would be my good one, is that the aquarium, if you want the aquarium for the gear, stop buying animals.
Yeah, right.
Just have a cool bubbling thing.
They make those fabulous plastic jellyfish that float around and look really cool under actinic light. So,
yeah.
But think of the animals. The animals are the end game here.
You have to love the biology and enjoy learning about it and thrive on the increased knowledge in your head about the amazing life under the sea. The lives of these animals are just unbelievably fascinating. I mean, they're beautiful to look at, but when you think about their breeding habits and everything that goes on, it's just so fascinating. It will enrich your mind beyond belief. So learn about it and don't be shy. Ask questions. Read books. It's wonderful. that's the best way to learn about how to take care of the animals, is to really learn about the biology of them and what their needs are. And don't anthropomorphize them. They don't need to be petted like dogs. They need, you know, what they need. And you should learn about that.
And maybe the mindset that we need to start working within is that keeping these animals is not a right, it's a privilege. And once you start thinking about it as a privilege, your value system changes, and the way you approach it and the way you care for those animals, I think, changes as well. So that's just a very simple switch of thought, you know, switch of pathway that I think makes a big difference.
Yeah,
but
I think
for the most part, our hobby encourages people to do just that, to really enjoy the beauty and the wonder of marine life, and to learn more about a world that we really don't, most people don't really know much about. And it's fascinating and wonderful. And I think that understanding this stuff makes everything else easy to do. And it gives you an appreciation for nature and our world that nothing else will. So that's the value that I find in it. And I think that understanding the biology of things and how things work under the ocean is going to help us all be more attentive and appropriate caretakers of our aquariums. I think it's the goal of most people, too, to do a good job. I mean, I think the object of the game is to keep them alive and to keep them healthy and beautiful. And the best way to do that is to learn more and keep learning, even when you think you know. Keep learning, keep reading, keep asking questions.
Oh, man, I sure hope that's the goal of most people.
I hope so, too. Maybe I'm just wishful thinking, but I do think that's the thing that drives me. So I guess we all tend to think about the rest of the world as though they are like us, but perhaps they're not. I don't know.
All right. With those thoughts, I think that's a good place to end this thing. It's been a tremendous discussion, and thanks, Kathy and Rich, for lending your thoughts. Really,
since you posed the question over a week ago, I've been thinking a lot about it. So it's good. It's made me think about things that I don't normally think about, and I always enjoy that.
Yeah, it was very fun. Thank you for having me, Ann. Research Plus!
Research Plus!
All right, with that, we will end Reef Threads Plus number 2, and we'll be back next month with another one. Thanks for listening.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you.